Video computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for T1 and 20K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are a go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. Today, we are speaking to author, researcher, Mr. Paul Blow from Quebec City. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, Len. How are you doing?
Glad to have you back on. People have always been giving me email comments about, you've got good guests. I like when Paul's on and other people. So you're well respected for your work. I know that we're going to talk about things that pop up on Kennedy's and King, but there's a couple of things you mentioned to me just, I guess, in talking or email that you wanted to cover, and I'm going to turn over the mic to you.
Okay, thanks, Len. So I will talk about my latest article, which is more of a revised and expanded article about something I was on your show for a number of months ago. But I think it's so very important that it's worth reviewing, and there's some added information. And I think that lately I've been going more on the nature of the assassination rather than trying to prove a conspiracy. To me, that's a done deal. And that's why I was also very happy with our show together with David Mantic, where we discussed his book, which was it's an impressive book, JFK Was Killed by Consensus, because it's no longer saying, hey, let me prove there's a conspiracy because of such and such a thing with the brain injury. It's who's behind it, what did they do, how did they do it? That's where we should all be now. Anyway, I'll get to that later. Yeah, I don't usually go on forums. I don't try and get involved in some of the skirmishes that we see sometimes that are unfortunate. We often see situations where, because of personal objectives or that sometimes we may negate work done by someone else because we have an agenda or whatnot. And I don't like that, really. Whatever I've done, and whenever I've been on a podcast or written an article, my sole goal is to figure out what the hell happened. Lately, there's one thing that's been, I find, obstruction from our own side, the people who think there's a conspiracy. And that has to do with the release of certain files. You know that some of my colleagues on chokeholds work very hard on the final determination forms. I know about it because I was with Andrew Eiler in Washington a year ago when Andrew was working his butt off to try and get final determination forms at NARA. So we went to NARA, and I went there more as an assistant, but I witnessed everything that happened. And listen, those final determination forms are buried deep in NARA, and they're made hard to get. I mean, we got lucky, Len, because don't ask me how. Andrew ordered something like 13 boxes of information. And I think on one of the last boxes, he opened it up, and it was a box labeled something like public questions or public relations. And in there, we found, by luck, 450 final determination forms. Now, there is no way that someone going looking for these files has a chance to just stumble on something like that. It was just pure luck. There's no rational way of finding them. Yet they exist. And Judge Tunheim said that they are definitely assassination-related documents. And they need to be released. Now, some people are saying, oh, well, it's moot. Everything's being declassified anyway. But no, I'll tell you why I think the final determination forms are important and why I would like to see them. Just the first 400 that we looked at, Len, we could see files that should have been released like in 2006, but they held off on till the 2020s. Okay, so in other words, a final determination form was an order saying you release this document by such a date. Okay, if you couldn't release it way back when, because maybe there was a witness who was still alive, or it could have revealed the methods that shouldn't be revealed at that time, they would say, well, yeah, but by this date, this is your drop dead date to either review it or release it. So we found some that went beyond the dates that were ordered, many, not just one, but many. And some of those files were really interesting because, they would deal with Mexico City, they would deal with other things. So the feeling one got there, and then, Andrew questioned one of the top people on what the heck was going on. Why were these files in such a box? And boy, it became very uneasy in the conversation. So the reason, and here, so yet some people are saying, oh, no, let's not go after these. It's not important. First of all, I don't think it's up to citizens to decide what's important and what's not important. It's not up to citizens. If I think it's important, it's not up to someone else to say, you're wrong. It isn't important. First of all, you haven't even seen it. Okay. Second, the law is the law, right? It didn't say just declassified important or unimportant, or, that would be like me saying, well, everything having done to do with Michael Payne, I don't think is that important. Let's keep it classified. I have no say in that, right? The second thing is they are assassination related files. Tonheim confirmed that. So they have to be released. They may reveal obstruction, obfuscation, ineptitude on the part of certain of the participants, who are involved in filing and archiving and declassifying. It may be even worse than that. I mean, we all know what happened to, the Sixth Floor Museum and the Texas School Book Depository. We all know what happens with school books. We all know what happened with media. So who's to say that the people who don't want us to know certain things won't interfere with a key source of information, which is NARA? I'm not accusing them of having done that, but they certainly should answer some questions as to why certain things weren't released on time. Okay. We may find that, what was the name of the guy? The CIA had a liaison at the inauguration of the museum, a guy called Briggs. And Briggs, imagine that, he's a liaison to make sure that the museum takes on a vocation that the CIA will have a word in. So, I mean, think about that for a while. And then, of course, you have Gary Mack, right? Who becomes the key archivist and curator. And we all know how anti-conspiracy he w became, right? Probably for a price. So, it's going to put civil servants on notice to ensure loyalty to who the real bosses are, right? Really, it's the American citizens who deserve, if you want transparency, you can't just take a law like that and say, well, I will apply it for certain documents and not others. And honestly, the files that have been kept secret the longest are the ones that interest me the most. So if I see a file that's been delayed a long time and said, hey, it should have been released in 2006, and yet it's not released now, Well, it kind of gives you the hint that this is a file that might be hiding something, not all the time. So that's why I want to see them. And the other thing is, can you name me any downside in releasing the final determination forms? What's the downside? Why?
Well, that's what I was about to ask you. It seems like you're saying in some forums people have been chirping up saying, "Don't, we don't care, we don't release them." I mean, the antidote to that is that, well, you don't have to read them. I'm
Oh.
interested and I want them and I want to read them.
Well, anyway, I find that sad. I find it too bad, and it's too bad because it's creating all sorts of how could I put it, insecurity, doubt among people, and some of these people, they carry influence, and it's anyway. I hope that they rethink it. And there's no reason not to go get those files. I mean,
No, of
absolutely.
course not, right? And like you
Well,
say, it should be the law. And then secondly, there's still to this day these I call them the flat earthers that are saying the Warren Commission had it right, and you can't trust Oliver Stone's film JFK, and all this is, it's like, look it, go back to your little corner and do what you want to do. But the serious researchers, we want to look through everything.
but the problem here, man, is some of the people who are refusing and who are obfuscating are serious researchers. They're not flat earthers. They really believe there's a conspiracy. It's not coming from the other side. Anyway, I find that's when I find it really too bad. The scientific method is what, right? You collect data. You don't analyze it as you're collecting it. You collect data. And it's very wide, and the data comes in, and then you go through it and you jump to your conclusions. But I've just given some very good reasons why they interest me, and they probably interest other researchers. So anyway, I really, because you see, the Luna Commission report, I have reason to believe, will be out in around March. And I'm hoping, and I have reason to believe that it can go pretty far. But if it isn't everybody on the same side, the report may not be what it could have been. I think it'll be, I'm optimistic, but it's really no time for the research community to be at loggerheads right now. And anyway, I thought I mentioned that, Len, because I don't, we're not self-serving here. We're not helping anyone, and that's what I wanted to point out before we discuss an article that I think is where we should all be working in the same direction. And it's there you go. That's my public
Okay,
message.
very good. Yeah. Well, I had come across several people, and I'll say just like John McAdams for one. And then before you know it, he kind of gets lumped in. He'll sign a couple of petitions and that, and his name is all of a sudden as if he's some kind of authority, and he's up there. And I shake my head.
But again, it's weird here. It's everybody who's supposed to be on the side, same side, and we're fighting one another on something this silly. Anyway, I won't go there again. I think I made my point, and let's move on to something else, because I think there's something. The article I wrote, Len, is a revised and expanded edition of the Pepe letters. It's so important, and I'll try and explain it. It can get real complicated. So I think the article that I wrote for Jim, and I have to tell you, Jim DiEugenio and yourself, and I know you get a lot of compliments, but I'm serious here. I think if you combine the archives of your two shows, because you have wonderful audio interviews, and Jim has, I mean, all the Probe magazines, all the Kennedys and King and CTK, K, articles and archives. It's the Britannica right, around these issues that are so important. And I honestly think that I zeroed in on Jim because he was on your show. That's how I decided to write an article for Jim, because I heard you interviewing him. And I offered him an article having to do with how history books cover the JFK assassination. It was a tough first article. I mean, he really grilled me, but it set something off, and I don't regret it for one bit. I wouldn't change anything. First of all, you guys go way back, right? I mean, there are other good shows out there, but how many years has your show been on, Len? It's
Well, I
it's so
started in the year 2000, so it's like 26 seasons.
26 seasons,
Yeah.
week after week, and sometimes two guests, right? Of archives and footage. I mean, if you listen to all of those and you weed out things, you will find in there are the clues of what happened and what really happened. I mean, whether it's Jim, whether it's Fletcher Prouty, whether it's Joan Mellon, I mean, the people you've had on. If people are listening to me, again, there's some lot. Look, I encourage that people listen to a lot of media, but the go-to places in the archives that you want to look into, there's nobody who does it better than Jim in terms of a website and in terms of a print, if I could put it that way. And in terms of interviews, well, I just find it's a one-two punch. I've never refused, and I never will refuse an opportunity to do something to help, and congratulations on that. So this article, I really wanted to get out. I called Jim up. I said, Jim, you've published this once. I just don't feel it's had the attention it should get. It's so important. And he agreed, but we had nice discussions, and he actually, when you say he edits, he went over paragraph by paragraph, and he says, okay, explain that to me. What are black letters? Are you saying this? Are you saying that? So, look, with that's why. And we came out and we decided to change, because the first article, Len, that I wrote was called the Pepe Letters, and it didn't do it justice. The Pepe Letters, I mean, it almost sounds like Pepe Le Pew or something. It doesn't sound. So we took another angle, because the Pepe Letters occurred at the height of the missile crisis. So the title of the article, At Kennedy's and King, is called The Missile Crisis Plot to Kill JFK. I think that title says it all, because though I think the motive to kill Kennedy was building up as of his election. When he got elected, you had a bunch of generals and admirals who didn't recognize him as a war hero. They saw him as a playboy who was coming in, a young wolf who couldn't show them the ropes, because of course he was replacing a guy who even the generals had to admit had more in his experience than they had, and that was Eisenhower, right? So for Kennedy to be the young, brash person coming in, and then you have people like Curtis LeMay, Lemnitzer, I think they prejudged him. They didn't like him from the get-go. And his message of decolonizing And it didn't sit well. But if you take the failed Cuba,
Bay of Pigs? Bay of
the
Pigs, yeah.
failed Bay of Pigs, sorry about that. The failed Bay of Pigs, it's already recorded and well known how that left a number of the operatives involved, including Cuban exiles, but a lot of CIA officers and military bitter against JFK. Then in 62, it's followed by the missile crisis. Missile crisis, the bitterness towards JFK. They couldn't understand, some of them, why JFK wouldn't take advantage of his nuclear strategic advantage over the Russians. They said, well, we got it. We have to use it, And they hated the idea that he would use diplomacy to get the problem solved. So around
Yeah, I
that.
remember one of the quotes was they were giving him facts and figures, and then he said, "Well, how many Cubans is this going to kill?" And it's like, "Oh, we don't even care about that, right?" You know, so
They didn't even seem to care about how many Americans could die if there was a
yeah.
full-blown war. But look, I think it's well noted that the military, by then, by the missile crisis, there's a consensus that Kennedy is dangerous for the U.S. according to the Cold War establishment here. So in October of 1962, at the height of the missile crisis, Kennedy was in a motorcade in Springfield, Illinois, I think. Springfield, Illinois. Definitely Springfield. I'm pretty sure it's Illinois. He's riding, and there's two people, two half brothers, in a building with a rifle pointing a gun at him. And they were eventually arrested, and they had ammunition. It wasn't just pointing a gun, but they said, "Oh, no, we were just testing our telescope." And they were let go, and there was never much news. These two people apparently are still alive. But the next thing that happened in November, and this is a plot, it's something that even the FBI and the CIA and the Secret Service called a plot to kill JFK. But before I get into it, the reason this plot is so important is because of the similarities it has with what took place a year later in and around the assassination. It's so similar, and yet it wasn't connected. It was so obviously easy to connect. And what they call it in criminology when you do that is it's called comparative case analysis, CCA for short. It can be also called similar fact analysis. And what you will be linking when you do CCA is you're going to check out, hey, look, there's this case that occurred before murder. There's this one that occurred 5 months ago. We have, whether it's sex crimes in a city or whether it's a serial murder, serial murders that are taking place, what you're going to look at is, do they have the same fingerprints? Do they have the same patterns? And you do that by looking at what? You look at the modus operandi. How did they break in? What were the tactics used? What were the techniques used in the various cases? You'll look for signatures and patterns. When I say signatures, it could be leave behinds. Did they leave an ace of spade behinds? Or did they leave writing on the wall? Did they leave a piece of evidence? You're going to look for that. You're going to look for forensic evidence during these things. Say, well, okay, if guns were used or whatnot, well, was it the same sort of ammunition? Was it the same sort of weapon? And of course, you're going to look at the intelligence around each of these cases. So you would take out the files and you'd look at them. Now, of course, you couldn't do that today, because the Secret Service destroyed an awful lot of their files having to do with travels of JFK in his last year. They've destroyed them despite the law, despite the fact that they knew they were to be made available for the ARRB. Yet, there is information that came out. And the earliest one, the one I call the missile plot, the missile crisis plot, an awful it was studied. It was studied by the FBI. It was studied by the Secret Service. I don't think they were as in cahoots as they became later with the CIA or the intelligence or the perpetrators. So when they got the information about the missile crisis, they said, "Oh, look, this is serious. We got to look into it," and they called certain people suspects. So the amount of evidence that you can find around these files that I found at Mary Farrell allow me to say, okay, well, how does it compare with what happened a year later? And that's the significance of this article, because if, Len, you do similar case analysis and you conclude that the cases are linked, right? Well, you eliminate the lone nut conspiracy day one. you have to agree that there's central coordination because you have two plots that are too similar, not that, too similar for it not to come from the same planners, right? So that's why this article is important, and that's why the Cuban Missile Crisis is important. Now, the next thing you ask yourself, okay, is suppose there are more clues to the failed plot than there were to the successful plot, or added clues that point to the same people. The question you ask yourself, can I solve the Kennedy assassination, who planned it, if I solve the earlier plot? I think I think if you're logical, right, you say, well, it's the same planners because it's the same MO, it's the same, there are too many things that are similar to not have certain brains that worked on both plots.
Well, do you want to, just for listeners maybe who haven't read your article yet, just give me an example of one thing that caught your eye? One,
Okay.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, oh, yeah, there are many, and I'll get into that because, okay. So to do that, you have to understand certain things of 1963, right? So in 1963, I think we can agree that there was an attempt to make Oswald look like he was pro-Castro. There was a definite attempt by sending him to Mexico City, not sending him, but by imitating him in Mexico City. There was an operation going on in Mexico City to make him look like he was in cahoots with Castro agents, right? Kostikov being the Tsar of assassinations in the Western Hemisphere for the Russians. That ends up not being true, by the way. It's not true. But it's what was stated at the time. So it had that impact of being true. That's right. So, in other words, what the hell was Oswald doing meeting someone and exchanging with someone who's in charge of assassinations? What were the other things that were said about Oswald in Mexico City? You got some of David Attlee Phillips's, false witnesses saying that he accepted bribes, that he was seen with Cuban agents. Okay. So those are some of the things. Now let's move on. This is what's really important. Okay, and th this is what came screaming out. We're still in 63. In and around the assassination. Oh, let me go start over. About 4 weeks before the assassination, Oswald sends a letter. It's his last letter he sends to the Russian embassy in Washington. This letter is written to a guy called Colonel Rezhnikov or something like that. Colonel Rezhnikov himself is described by Hoover and other researchers as someone involved in assassinations. It refers to Mexico City. Okay, it refers to Askew, who was at the Cuban embassy, and says something to the effect that, we all know he lost his job, which was true, but he wouldn't have been known to Oswald unless someone told him that. Okay, so the things in the letter refers to, instead of Kostikov, it refers to Kostin. Okay, and in other words, what it does, that letter, is it's there to validate the affirmation that Oswald was even in Russia, and to make it look even more that he's in cahoots with the Russians. The Russians, after the assassination, they had that letter, right? The FBI had intercepted this letter, okay? And guess who produced a copy of a handwritten draft of the letter? Because this letter uncharacteristically was typed. Oswald never typed his letters to the Russian embassy except for that one, right? So guess who, corroborated these letters with supposedly written drafts by Oswald, handwritten? Ruth Payne. Ruth Payne, of course, after everybody searched her house, and never found these letters. Oh well, she found them, and she provided them to intelligence, say, oh yeah, no, these letters are really from Oswald. except they became an embarrassment to him. And they became an embarrassment for the same reason I'll mention, because they wanted to go the known nut route, right? They didn't, eventually, when you want to go the known nut route, everything that was done in Mexico City and everything that was suggested in this letter did not fit that scenario. It fit more a scenario of Oswald being in cahoots with Russians and Cubans. Now, let me go to another thing that happened shortly after. I've talked about it. Are you familiar, Len, with the five letters that came in from Havana? The letters that were used to incriminate Oswald.
Right, but yeah, for people who aren't, go over that.
Okay, so let's go over this. Four letters arrive in the US. One is sent to Robert Kennedy. One is sent to, oh God, what's the name of that? Radio Free. No, it's one of these, these propaganda radio stations, Radio Liberty or something like that. Another one was sent to right-wing media that, was close to the Cuban exiles. Another one was sent to Oswald himself. There was a fifth letter that never made it to North America because it was left behind in a postal station in Cuba because it burned down. So the Cubans had the letter. And then later in a meeting in Mississauga, not Mississauga, in later when there was a meeting between Fabian Escalante of the G2 and some JFK researchers, he brought the letter. He says, "Hey, by the way, we have this letter." And I'm going on memory here. And it's a letter, I believe, that was also destined for Oswald. Now, I'll try and explain. The letters destined to Oswald, the two, were written as if they were coming from a Cuban agent and saying, I mean, it was really tacky there, but it was saying, "You are an artist, you can blow out a candle at 50 yards." When I told that to Castro, he was really impressed. "There's going to be more money for you. You're going to be greeted in Cuba as a hero." I'm paraphrasing here, okay? Really tacky, tacky lines, okay? And it's something saying, "Well, I'm an agent, good job. And when we met, okay? And when we met in Houston, and when we met in Mexico, okay?" So the people who wrote these letters, right? By now it's not known. The assassination hasn't taken place. So the only people who could write a letter of this nature, and the one to the Cuban, to the Russian embassy, the letters, were people who were aware of an operation to place Oswald in Mexico City. Who would have known that he had been at Houston at a certain time? There was a rumor that he was in Florida at one point in time, and they refer to Florida in these letters. One of the witnesses that David Attlee Phillips had, a false witness, claimed that he saw Oswald accepting $7,000 in bribes in the Cuban embassy. A guy called Alvarado, okay, a real BS artist, but he was nevertheless an asset for David Attlee Phillips, a CIA agent stationed in Mexico City who's specialized in that type of red flag, okay, operation. So you have these letters, they're incriminatory letters. We have six of them. One was Oswald's letter, supposed letter to the Russian embassy. The Russians, when they saw that, they said, "This is fake. It's a provocation. It's made to look," and they told that to the Americans. "It's a total fake." Then, when the FBI had to analyze the five letters from Havana, right? Well, they had to say, come up with some sort of excuse because, again, this now after the assassination, these letters do not suit or do not go in line with the known nut scenario, right? It doesn't make any sense. The letters were sure to be intercepted. They were written and sent to places that were sure because the CIA was intercepting Oswald's mail. The obviously Robert Kennedy and right-wing media would, make it right away available to intelligence. Now, the letters from Havana that were sent to media, they were a bit different than Oswald's letter. What they were, it they were developed to look like letters from informants. And they were saying, hey, you guys should take a look at this Oswald character. We know that he's in cahoots with an agent called Pedro Charles. Okay. So they were informant letters saying that Oswald was in cahoots with Cuban agents, or they were letters from the Cuban agent to Oswald showing that they were in cahoots. But all in all, the effect was here are letters. Here's documentary evidence that Oswald is connected to the people that want Kennedy dead, ergo Castro, Cuban agents, Kostikov. And we're giving you your big, juicy excuse now to counterattack and invade Cuba. That was the whole strategy around the Mexico City event and around these incriminatory letters. Okay. Is that clear for 63? Do you think is that like in terms of explaining the strategy that happened in 63? Because if it's not clear, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go what happened to what happened a year earlier. Okay. But I just want to make sure that this idea of a stratagem using incriminatory letters, using fake events in Mexico City, they were all set up to make Oswald look like he was in league with the US's enemies and that they would be the ones blamed for the assassination of Kennedy.
Yeah, I mean, with the global ramifications, right?
Yeah. Okay. Now, keep in mind that some of the things that were done with Oswald, right? One of the key things to make him look like he was in cahoots to set the table for all this is what's he doing in New Orleans all summer, or towards the end of the summer anyway, before he goes to Mexico City. He's leafleting for the Fair Play for Cuba committee. He's going on radio debating and saying that he's a Marxist. He's obviously making a total pain of himself in the worst city possible for that in New Orleans. Now that obviously is a mission he's given. It's not ideology. Nobody's crazy enough. And even his lawyer, Dean Andrews, said that Oswald told him that he was being paid $25 a day to distribute flyers. Where does he set up office? Right? At 544 Camp Street. So on the flyers, and some of them, a few of them, not many, flyers or pamphlets, whatever you want to call them, you see the address 544 Camp Street. Who is in the 544 Camp Street? Well, the previous tenants to Oswald on where he was the Cuban Revolutionary Council. Of course, in that very same building, you had Guy Bannister and you had David Ferry. Okay, all, I mean, rabid anti-communists. The HSCA said, right at the end, that we believe that Ferry and Oswald had a relationship during that summer of 1963. So keep in mind the Fair Play for Cuba Committee because Fair Play for Cuba Committee was described by the House of Un-American Activities as Castro's network in the United States. That's why the FPCC is such a lightning rod and so controversial. Okay, the Pepe letters. Before we get to the Pepe letters, I wrote many articles on other prior plots between 1962 and 1963, where you had potential patsies that really looked like Oswald, or were given sort of a similar persona. I mean, one of them is Policarpo Lopez, who was being earmarked for an assassination in Tampa just a few days earlier. And even the HSCA said, it's egregious that we didn't look into this guy more, because Policarpo Lopez attended Fair Play for Cuba committee meetings. Then there was Von Marlow. Okay, he would have been behind an assassination in June, somewhere in LA during the showing of, what is it, PT, what's the name of the boat? Kennedy's boat.
GT109.
PT-109 was the name of the movie with Cliff Robertson, I think. And it was going to be showed there. There was a rumor that Kennedy might have showed up anyway, that there would have been a bomb or a machine gun murder in the cinema. And the guy who would have been blamed for that was a guy called Von Marlow. Von Marlow was connected to Richard Case Nagel. And Von Marlow was heading the LA chapter of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Okay. So, and these aren't the only ones, but I can go into land almost a dozen cases, similar cases that needed to be analyzed before the assassination and after, because there are things that happened even after the assassination where even Lyndon Johnson was being targeted by a Fair Play for Cuba Committee character. Okay. But I won't go into that. There's articles at Kennedy's and King on the prior plots. So I wrote a lot about these, but it was only in 2025, early this year. I think it was early this year or late 2024. I think it was early this year that as I'm going through the newly declassified documents and others, I'm starting to read about a prior plot involving the paper letters. Okay, and this prior plot takes place in and around November 1962. Really important to understand that by now, Kennedy is hated by many people, right? It's the missile crisis. William Harvey, okay. He almost completely torpedoed the diplomacy by sending a mission, organizing a mission into Cuba, at the height of the negotiations. That got him exiled to Rome. And who's William Harvey? Well, he's the American assassination czar, if I could put it that way. He's one of the people who knows the most about how you eliminate an opponent. So these during 1960, at around that time, letters started coming in from Cuba. Okay, so you ask me what's astonishing. Three letters came in from Havana in November 1962. There are these letters, three of them, that come in to the US. Okay. One is sent to a place called Radio Libertad. Radio Libertad is an anti-Castro propaganda unit. Okay. And it's an antenna of the CIA. The CIA uses, collaborated with them. They had, I think, a station in Mexico, but they definitely had an antenna right near JM Wave in Miami, right? JM Wave being the key station for targeting Castro. The sender, this is key. So you have the sender. His name is Jose Menendez Ramos, but his nickname is Pepe. Now, the letters, when you read them, Len, they're dead ringers. They're so similar in style and wording as the letters that came out 5 year a year later, the five letters. I mean, it's you'll be a hero, and they're They're talking to potential patsies in 1962, not Oswald, others, okay? Others that had communist links. And they're saying, hey, I mean, look, when you read it says, if we are able to kill President Kennedy, it would be a great success, super extraordinary for Fidel, Marxist Leninists 90 miles from the US. We will be able to paralyze imperialism completely, terrorize capitalism, get in contact with your friends. You are an artist. It's so similar. Now, when you go on when you go into the article, the readers will be able to read all nine letters, the three letters of 1962 and the six letters of 1963. If they're not convinced that they're not from the same authors, that it's not the same strategy, then I don't know what to say. It is okay. Now, here's the kicker. As I'm reading these files, I'm discovering a little bit more as I go along. And you know what I find out about Pepe Menendez? He's in Havana. He's being targeted as the sender of the letter. He is being called a suspect by the FBI and the Secret Service, right? Well, get this. Pepe Menendez had lived in Tampa for a while. And you know what he did there? He headed a Fair Play for Cuba committee chapter. Now, just ponder that for a second. This Fair Play for Cuba committee, that it is linked to Oswald, that it is linked to Lopez, Von Marlowe, even Richard K. Snagel had Fair Play for Cuba committee flyers in his car. Now I'm finding out for this one that the supposed sender of the letter is an ex-Fair Play for Cuba committee guy. So you ask me what stand out? Well, you have to read the letters to see the similarity. And then you have to see, well, oh, okay, I'm on this thing, like I've been on this Fair Play for Cuba for years. And as I'm reading these files, I said, I don't think, Len, that in 1962 that they're going to somehow find a link to the Fair Play for Cuba committee. It would be too crazy. And then on about the sixth or seventh file that I get on, it's confirmed that he, Pepe Menendez, and his wife were members of the Fair Play for Cuba committee in Tampa. I said chaired them, but they were on the board of these two committees. This to me, so the exactly same strategy of making Fidel look like he's behind a plot to kill the JFK in 63 that had to go away, you see happening in 62 at the height of the missile crisis. The use of incriminatory letters, okay, is something that was, I mean, that's jumped out the most. And then the fact that these guys, okay, that the letters in both cases are designed to be intercepted and make their way to intelligence. Both ears, they're sure to be intercepted the way they do it. Because when you send something to Radio Libertad, a anti-communist propaganda outfit, what are they going to do with it? They're going to certainly, and they did. So what they did, in fact, was the woman who picked it up, who worked for Radio Libertad, the woman called Olga Duque, gave it to one of her contacts from the Cuban exile community, a guy called Gejate. Now, Gejate happened to be an Emot. An Emot is one of these Cuban exiles that's organized under outfits run by the CIA and JM Wave. Gejate brings it to JM Wave. The letter makes its way to William Harvey. And then William Harvey is, his team is all over this letter, making sure that it gets known to, but gets to the FBI and the CIA. This was all I think that the missile crisis was a probably one point where the hatred of Kennedy by his own people must have been at its highest. They all wanted to push a button. And then you get these juicy letters. I mean, I'm only describing one of the letters, but there are two others, right? And you have to read them also. They're just as similar. And if you look at who the people they were targeting as recipients, okay, the people who were, okay, one guy is a guy called Antonio Rodriguez, another guy is something, I think it's Morales, Bernardo Morales. You go into their characters, they're perfect for playing the Oswald role, right? They're people that you could say, oh boy, when you look into their past and who they're linked with, they're on the other side. So the reason, if you look at this, okay, you can't have. Now, let me move on a bit, because this brings us to some of the files declassified this year. I found a Rockefeller Commission file. And this file, I mean, it's crazy. It's called Black Letters. It's a file about black letters. And what they are, the file number for your readers, if you want to go and see it, read the article, but it's 178, 10,004, 10,148, fully released in 2025. It's from the Rockefeller Commission.
Sorry, what was that number again?
178. Okay, 10,004, 10,148. I can send it to you after. It's from the Rockefeller Commission. And what it discusses, you can understand why they didn't want this one out. It only came out fully in 2025. And its earliest release of one that was heavily redacted, I think, was 2022. So you know that this clearly was, I mean, look, the drop dead deadline for declassifying was 2017, right? So this one they didn't want out. Okay. And look, I'll read some of the content of this letter. Tab C, special covert operations, which makes use of mail, including C1, a forged letter mailed in Prague to a Czech leader. C2, mailing of black letters, primarily from third countries. However, see page, but anyway, some of these letters may have been inserted into the mail system ostensibly as having originated in the denied area. Okay? In other words, you want the recipient to believe that this letter came from Chinese communists, so you make it appear as if it had been mailed from China. Note that the last item in this group refers to letter insert mechanisms. I can find no elaboration of what this means, but it might represent intercept of the mail, surreptitious. I'm having trouble with words.
Surreptitious.
Surreptitious. Okay, opening of a letter. An insert of some additional material. This category represents probable entry into the Nash international mail system to support a covert operation. The first item shows DOC, DOE, sorry, sending letters from groups in North Vietnam to other countries. The second shows CIA fabricating and mailing 700 letters from Peking. The third shows CIA fabricating Democratic of Re Republic of Vietnam greeting cards and mailing them. Okay, so that's a description of what black letters on, and it goes on. Okay, it goes on. There's a lot more to that. So if you look at the Pepe letters and you look at the six incriminatory letters that took place in 1963, you can only conclude that they're black letters, that they're letters, you know, the tone of the letters, the wording, the content, as well as the design to be intercepted expedition of all nine letters, the incrimination targets, okay, so the people who would have received the letters, the nature of the recipients, the timing, it can only be interpreted one way. They're black letters. And who are the people that organize black letters? It's the covert operators. It's people like Lansdale. It's people like David Attlee Phillips, people like William Harvey. Those are the people that can handle this kind of stratagem. That's why I say it's so important, because if you clue in on a stratagem that becomes definite, then you ask yourself, who has the means to do that? Who has the knowledge to do that? Who has the people left behind in Havana? And I believe in this case, they were sent from Havana and not mailed from somewhere else to make it look, because of one thing, is Fabian Escalante said that he, and in one of the letters, did remain in Havana. But that's not a big problem, because we know that there were a lot of Cubans in Cuba that were still responding to their contacts in Miami. So, especially a guy like David Attlee Phillips, who had operated out of Havana for a number of years, and who set up operations in Havana. So he knew the networks, and he knew people who knew the people who had networks. So if you look at it that way, and if you look who gravitates around, who's the person that everything gravitates around when you go to Mexico City? David Attlee Phillips, okay? It's his false witnesses. It's him that brings, that claims that the tapes have been destroyed. It's under his watch that there are cameras pointed at the embassies. It's his lies to Dan Hardaway, that caused Hardaway to say this guy, has got to be charged with perjury. And then who do the Pepe letters gravitate around? William Harvey. It's his people that intercept the letters. It's his people that make sure the letters make it to the FBI, okay, and the CIA, and they can come up with this story that, hey, you know what? There's something in the works to kill Kennedy, and it's coming from Cuba. So that's what's happening there. And it's right along ZR rifle. What is ZR rifle? It's the program set up by Harvey for executive action. And I'll quote from it here. ZR rifle. It also contemplates a need for false documentation within CIA files to protect the operation from an exposure. Cover planning should include provision for blaming Czechs or Sovs or Soviets in case of blow. We should have phony 201 and RI backstop to this documentation. Therein forged and backdated should look like counter-espionage file. So, this is what this article is about. And again, Token, a very normal thing you would do in any assassination is case linkage. It wasn't done, but this was an easy case to link and say, wait, we got incriminatory letters with this tone sent by a guy from who was with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Now, flash forward to 63. Oh, we got the same tone, same type of letters coming in from Havana in many cases, and sent to who? A guy who's with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Come on. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that these two cases are linked. And again, if they're linked, well, you prove there's a conspiracy. Second, you start saying, well, okay, who gravitates around this? And boy, does William Harvey and David Attlee Phillips become people of extreme interest when you look at the stratagems here of incriminating a foe. That's what the
Well,
article
yeah, good. That has given enough interest, I'm sure, to anyone listening to go through your article. And even maybe go what you said, there's nine letters in total, right?
Yeah, so read the references at the end. You'll be able, you'll I'll refer to articles like Exposing the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, which is also a Kennedy's and King article. I'll expose the failed plots to kill JFK and other Kennedys and King article. Then there's something called the CIA and Mafia's Cuban American Mechanism, also at Kennedy's and King. I have an article on Oswald's last letter, okay, the one that he sent to the Russian embassy incriminating himself that was typed and was also a fake. Then I have one. Honestly, I really suggest that they listen to. There's a link for my talk in England when I spoke at the UK Daily Plaza, a fantastic conference, and it's called On the Trail of the Plotters. Okay, and I mentioned Bill Simpich and people like Doug Campbell and others who did work on it. And I have key files. Okay, so when I tell you I saw files, and the files I refer to in this show, I have all their links in the article, so you can read them. I mean, you'll in the article, and you have the number that I gave you, which is a description of how CIA uses covert black letters. I have links to the people who were involved. I have a link to this Gajate Puig. I said that Gajate was the person that Radio Libertad gave the letter to, who made sure that it made its way up the chain of command at JAMWave to reach William Harvey. Now, one final note on this is they decided to close the case on the paper letters because it was open. And you know when it was closed? One day before Kennedy was assassinated. Because again, if you're going to Lone Nut Room, these are not the letters that you want to take seriously. They would have been so wonderful, these letters, if you wanted to attack Castro. They would have had their documentary proof. They would have had.
Right. So somebody made the decision, and that it probably imposed on Lyndon Johnson, as he told people, look at there'll be a third world war if Russia comes to defend Cuba, and we don't need that. And by the way, they're saying, well, we got our guy out, so we're going to be okay.
That's right. And these black letters were toothpaste that came out of the tube that they couldn't put back in. And that's how you have to see it. And when you read about the black letters, okay, and you're saying, hey, wait a minute, something like this happened a year earlier, and you're not putting two and two together. No, you're not looking. You don't want to solve this murder.
All right, very good, Paul. Thank you so much for sharing your time.
No problem.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to add? I mean, I think you pretty well covered it for now to inspire people to read further.
No, I'm going to have a busy November. I'll be presenting in French here in Quebec City to an audience in a little theater, but I hope to get it live streamed. It'll be in French. And I'm trying to also, I'll be talking remote for Lancer and Dave Denton in and around the 22nd. So,
Okay, good. Well,
people, if they want to hear more about this, finally, maybe you're aware, we did some of our research on where the JFK research community, what are their perceptions around the motive, the timeline, the people involved. Myself, Jeff Meek, and Dave Boylan, we've done a heck of a lot of research. We were hoping to release it this November, but we've decided to put it off until the annual
Luna report in the spring.
comes. Oh yeah, well, I think it's going to be more like March is what I'm hearing, but anyway. Because we don't want the research to become obsolete on a few points. So we've already incorporated a lot of the declassified information into our research, but you never know what might come out between here and then. And you don't want to do something where say, oh, well, this is already. We've polled people though and asked them, how has the Luna committee affected your perceptions, and asked questions along those lines. So our research is very timely. It's very interesting, I think. And that keep your eyes on that because Dave Boylan is a incredible. He goes through files like crazy. Jeff Meek is an awesome interviewer, and I like working with him just like I like working with our Chokeholds gang for the book. That's also coming up. So staying busy.
Okay, well, there's things for me to call you back and give us another update on then.
Great, Len, and have a great trip to. I understand you're going to Mexico City, and I'm not sure if I'm talking too much,
I'm
but
going to Mexico. I'm not sure about
Mexico.
Mexico City, but
Oh, Mexico.
all over the Baja and
Oh, wow.
I'll
Wow.
report back to you. Yeah.
Send me pictures.
Okay.
Take
All
care.
right. Thanks very much, my friend.
No problem.